afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is David Ehrenholz, and I'd like to welcome you all to this symposium on photography for entomologists. I'm not an entomologist by training. I'm a surgeon, but I'm here to give you a little bit of an idea of how you can do digital photography in the field for less than $200. My objective this afternoon is to identify a cheap and small camera for many field situations, or a very compact backup camera for a more sophisticated system. Explain why point-and-shoot cameras give poor results unless used with a few simple manual settings. And explain why you may not need a small camera with 10 megapixels and ISO settings to 3200, no matter what the manufacturers try and sell you. So, since I haven't had a chance to meet most of you, I want to do a survey. How many people here are really interested in doing field photography as opposed to dead specimens? Wonderful. How many currently use film SLRs? Me either. I used to. How many use digital SLRs? Okay, they're great. Wonderful quality, just big and heavy and expensive. How many would like an affordable small camera for field photography alone, or perhaps as a backup camera? I will tell you the camera I'm using is in my pocket right now. However, I have a disclaimer. I am not a professional entomologist. I have been associated with Smithsonian as a volunteer for the last 21 years, and I've been selling my photographs since I was age 14. The quality of current digital cameras is difficult to demonstrate, however, because standard projectors used for PowerPoint presentations have about 1 megapixel of resolution. So this 1 megapixel image projected looks pretty good. Worthless, by the way, if you try and make a print out of it. Compared to this photograph, which is taken from a 40-year-old Kodachrome slide I took and scanned at 20 megapixels resolution. So you're not going to get a real sense of what these cameras are capable of based on this presentation, perhaps. People ask me, what camera do you recommend? And my response is, if you own a small digital camera, see if it meets your needs by practicing the kinds of shots you will take when in the field. If it works, fine. If it doesn't, I can help. I have looked at digital cameras of every size and shape, from the huge SLRs that weigh up to 4.5 pounds, completely loaded with all the flash and massive telephoto lenses for close-up photography, all the way down to a tiny subcompact, which fits in my shirt pocket, has a 3X completely internal lens, so that when the lens extends, it doesn't shade the sun that's on the object or shade my flash, and weighs 4 ounces. Oh, and by the way, this is what it looks like. These are so small, you always have it in your pocket. My problem is I forget which pocket. The images can be framed at arm's length, literally this far away, which you cannot do with an SLR where you have to lean in, which, by the way, usually scares your subject. And the subject only sees this tiny little camera, and it's less likely to be frightened or flee if I put it up like this, take its picture, and put the camera back down. In the old days, Larry West, shown here, and John Shaw and I used to use this camera that we show you on the left. And I can tell you that after lugging that up and down hills for a couple of weeks in the tropics, it feels like you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. Now, I know some of you in the audience are a lot smarter than I am, and so you have a grant, and perhaps you've used that grant money to hire an assistant. Unfortunately, I haven't. So, if you know you're only going to photograph large objects like people and landscapes, any point-and-shoot camera will get you great quality. But if you want to do insect portraits or life histories, say larvae or even eggs, and really small subjects, you need macro capabilities. How do we define macro photography? Well, for the last 40 years, 35mm film cameras have used macro lenses, which have the ability to photograph full frame a tiny object 1 inch tall or 1.5 inches wide, which is the size of a 35mm slide. That gives you a 1-to-1 reproduction ratio. Those lenses are large, heavy, and expensive. A few tiny 4-ounce digital point-and-shoot cameras can do this macro, although they do it by using a very tiny sensor. And herein lies the rub. Don't get lost on this now. This is important. Digital SLRs use large sensors, very similar to 35mm film in size. However, the tiny point-and-shoot cameras use very tiny sensors. And the problem is, it's the difference between the old large format Hasselblad camera and the tiny little Minox spy camera. And as you enlarge that image, the problem is that you tend to get a lot of blockiness. We call that pixelization. So the camera manufacturers have taken the resolution of the SLR and crammed it into ever smaller sensors. So you have an 8-megapixel sensor in an SLR, which has a field this big, or 8 megapixels into a tiny little sensor this big. And the problem is that when that happens, you get something called noise. In the old days, we called it grain in film. So do more megapixels always mean better quality? There was a time when that was literally true. When we went from 1.2 megapixel cameras to 2.5 megapixel cameras, I threw away all my 1 megapixel images. They were just garbage. But now that we've gotten up to 6 and 8 and 10 megapixels, it's hard to see, even with massive enlargement, a really big difference between a high quality 6 megapixel image shown magnified on the right versus a 10 megapixel image from a same size imager shown on the left. That's as long as you stay at the low ISO settings. Low ISO is like using slow grain film. Some of you may remember film. More megapixels, however, causes problems when you increase the gain. You try and increase the speed of your camera so you can get pictures in lower light. And as you use higher ISO settings, the image degrades very fast in cameras with small sensors. The net result is the high-resolution camera you spent so much money for can only be used in high light levels without major quality loss. The sweet spot is around 6 or 7 megapixels for the small cameras. For the SLRs, it's probably going to be somewhere between 12 and 15 megapixels. Now, I'll give you an example, and I'm not just picking on Sony here. We get the same results using Nikon, Canon, and Olympus, you name it. I've shown you two very small cameras this size. One is a Sony T9, which is 6 megapixel, and the other is a Sony T100, which is 8 megapixel. And at ISO 80, the detail in the hair of this model is extremely well resolved, until you go to higher ISOs, and then it turns to garbage. It is just worthless. Do not, under any circumstances, buy a camera because it will shoot 3200 ISO. If it's a small camera, you will get garbage. The other hint that I will tell you is, no matter what digital camera you are using, please do not use auto mode. In the auto setting, most small cameras select a very high ISO setting, which gives you a huge amount of noise, and the photos usually have poor auto color balance, so the image looks gray or greenish. The result is poor image quality. Here are two photographs taken about 20 seconds apart 2 months ago on a hilltop in Ecuador. On the left, the camera was set in automatic mode. It chose to use ISO 1600 with no flash. Now, these cameras do not allow you to set the f-stop and the shutter speed, but it turns out that I took a picture 20 seconds later, which I had used the limited manual settings available in this camera to set an ISO of 100, turn on the flash, and set it for flash color balance. And I hope you can see that there's a difference in quality between those two pictures. Nevertheless, the camera is identical, the subject is identical, the f-stop and shutter speed are identical. The difference is the ISO and the amount of light provided by the flash. Neither of those pictures is saleable, but this one is. Actually, this will appear next year in a book. And it was taken about 20 minutes after those other two pictures, using identical settings with the flash enabled. Manual settings will give you the best quality in your small camera. Set the menu to set the ISO and the color balance. When you force the camera to use a slow ISO, however, it's like using very slow film. You can get blurry photos unless you use a flash or a tripod. And as someone who's lugged a tripod all over South America trying to get pictures of moving insects, I will tell you, you get real tired of it very fast, even if it is carbon fiber. So you want to lock the color balance to flash if the flash is activated, or your color balance will come out too blue, which is also not acceptable. So here's another photograph, and literally this photograph is taken on the same hilltop. The butterfly landed over my head, about that far away. I pulled the camera out, turned it on. Within 10 seconds, I had its picture. It took me 5 seconds to review the picture, 2 seconds to turn the camera off and put it back in my pocket. That picture will also appear in a book next year. So in trying to find which camera to use, I looked at about 20 models made by Canon, didn't like them. I looked at all these other models listed here, including the ones in white, which are discontinued, and the ones in which are in green, which are still available, and found two camera models that actually worked. The features that I found most useful were having a large LCD screen. That's on the back of the camera. That's so that you can, one, review what you've taken and see if it's sharp, but also you can take the pictures without leaning your head in to frame the subject. Macro features are critical if you're taking pictures of small subjects. You want a macro which functions at mid to long focal lengths so that you are further away from the subject when you actually snap the shutter. Most cameras, almost all cameras, lock into macro at the widest setting of their zoom. That means you are almost on top of the subject when you take its picture. The other problem is that when you get really close, a lot of flash cameras will overpower your subject like this. Totally useless. This is a Nikon S6, a replacement for this camera, which is a nice Nikon S3, and the Nikon S3 takes spectacular pictures at very close ranges. This is greater than 1:1 magnification. The camera weighs 4 ounces, and I used to carry around camera gear that weighed about 4 pounds. So if you're looking for a really cheap camera, get a used or refurbished Nikon S3, which has all of these features, the most important of which is it used to cost $440 22 months ago. Today you can buy one on eBay for less than $130, refurbished. And it enables you to take pictures from a distance. What do you get for your $200? You can get a Nikon S3 camera, a memory card, a padded case, a Nikon branded battery. I've used other brands of batteries to fit that camera and they failed on me, so don't make that mistake. For less than $200, you end up with a camera that weighs a little over 4 ounces, and including the charger, you end up with a system that weighs less than a pound. That's fantastic. If you want to go a little upscale, you can go to the Nikon S7C camera, also discontinued, which enables you to lock focus. It has a larger LCD with higher resolution so that it's easier to review your pictures, and it has added spot and center weighted meter reading. It's going to cost you about $40 more. And it gives you pictures like this. Mistakes to avoid. This is the S3 on the left, the S7C on the right. If you buy a pink, red, green, or blue camera body, when you get it close to your subject, that subject will take on the cast of that color. You can buy a white camera or a silver camera if you want. You can put camo tape on it. You can tape them with black if you want. It doesn't matter. Are you going to use flash or not flash? It's a decision you should make before you approach your subject. If you're going to use flash, set the ISO for 50 or 100, set the camera in macro mode, activate the flash, and set for flash color balance. Turn on the camera, zoom to mid position, which activates the macro, frame and shoot, shoot again, and then review and make sure you've got good pictures. If you choose not to use flash, here's my recommendation. Set the camera ahead of time to macro mode. Set the color balance for sun or cloudy depending upon the conditions of the illumination. And set your ISO for 100, maybe 200. You go much higher than that, you're going to get that blockiness we talked about. And then turn on the camera, zoom to mid position, frame and shoot. Repeat many times and then review. And the reason is you're going to get some fuzzy images. Nikon actually has a system where they have best shot selector. You hold the shutter down, it takes multiple frames. When you let go of the shutter, it looks at the frames and saves the sharpest one for you. Now, I have two pictures here taken 20 seconds apart 2 months ago on a hilltop in Ecuador. The flash on the left froze the bee down by the antenna, which is nice, but I didn't like the black background. So I reset the camera and took a second picture. This is okay, except that the illumination coming through the canopy forest is greenish. So this color here is not acceptable and needs to be corrected in post-processing. Mistakes to avoid. Don't use digital zoom to get a larger image of a distant subject. It magnifies the center of the image, and usually it's blocky or fuzzy. You just have to move in closer. And please avoid using insect repellent. It really works. Point-and-shoot cameras are really dumb. You can't make many camera adjustments. Blur is a huge problem because the tiny cameras are hard to hold still. Most shots require processing for optimal color, contrast, and sharpness. And this shot flying into Quito doesn't look all that good until you post-process it. And if we had another 10 minutes, I'd give you some hints on how to do that, but we don't have that much time. So I'll stop. There might be time for a question. Just be glad you don't have my job, which is taking care of these folks. And this is what he looks like after three operations. Thank you.
There's time for questions?
Yes.
Is there a problem with the one-screw camera, especially with the macro, when you have very little control of depth of field?
The interesting thing, the question is, do you have depth of field control with macro cameras? You cannot set the f-stop, but you're using lenses that have exceptionally short focal length. And so the surprising thing is that when you use a 12-millimeter lens, zoomed to 12 millimeters, the depth of field is much greater than a 105-millimeter lens on a 35-millimeter camera. Great question. Any others? The way to the back, speak up.
Yeah, I think you said that you had tested some Canon point of view and was it satisfied with those? Why was that?
They all locked in. The question about Canons is, why didn't I like Canons? We actually use them at work all the time. And I don't use Canons in the field because they lock into macro at widest zoom setting, and you can get a huge photograph as long as you're willing to have the lens touch the subject. I'm not. Question?
Do you see much difference the RAW and the TIFF
format? That's a little bit beyond the discussion for this group. RAW and TIFF are two very large uncompressed file formats. I like RAW. TIFF is just too big and unwieldy, and RAW enables you to do amazing things like those color cast changes are one click in aperture if you do that.